So welcome to the first episode of Intelligent Data Capture. We're here with Jim Warner. He is our CEO. And we're here with Cameron Boland. He is our COO. And we want to kick this off by just giving you an overview of Capture. And well, Capture's been around for a while. This is nothing new. We've talked a lot about this ourselves, but there's this new wave of Capture that is coming along that it's so important for us to be talking about and people to understand right now. So, Jim, kick us off by just giving us a background, some history of Capture. You guys have been, Keymark's been in this for over a quarter of a century at this point. You've watched the transition happen. We'll talk some more about that transition in a little bit, but just give us the basic background. What is it? Definition, explained, talk about that.
Yeah, an old school, but basically what you would end up with is you'd end up with an individual, let's say an executive that might have two secretaries. Those secretaries are responsible for dictation, for documenting things. And in the day, they would basically take those documents, they put them in a manila envelope and then store them in a folder. And then as technology developed, an organization came out called FileNet. They developed a document imaging system. You needed technology to be able to store and index that data so that you could retrieve it quickly. Basically, what happened is initially you'd have people that would actually do that. They would look at the documents. They would say specifically what the index information was that would be stored within the database so you could retrieve those images from that system. The advancements happened. The next thing you know, you had optical character recognition, actually extracting some of the index data off the documents, lifting it so that you could store it. So if you're bringing up a document, let's say for a human resource application, and you're bringing up a document for Jim Warner, you could bring up and do a search on Warner, bring that back up, use my social security number, whatever it might be, and retrieve that quickly and, most important, accurately.
Yeah. So that OCR you're talking about, optical character recognition. Yeah. Cameron, talk a little bit about that. Some people may confuse that as Capture as a whole. We know that's a very important part of Capture. But give us a little color around what OCR really is. What's happening there? What is going on?
Sure. So we'll actually start with the Capture piece of it, which is, you know, as Jim alluded, we have documents and things like that that were originally on paper, and you actually use a scanner to digitize those documents. And what that digitization is turning the picture, what you see on the paper, into bits and bytes and all those things that we think about. So really pixels in a digital file. OCR is a technology that looks at those pixels and tries to determine where they are in relationship to each other and then recognize patterns within them. So the letter A, capital, is different than a lowercase a, mm-hmm. which is different than a T, which is different than a 6. So we have this technology that tries to look at all these patterns and identify what the letters are. And then, of course, once you have letters, you can start to create words and put those things together. OCR is the underlying technology. It's a tool, really, used by many different or all different capture applications. It's that underlying technology that tells us what those pixels actually represent in English or French or Chinese or whatever the language is.
And so we'll probably talk more about this later, the training of that system. When they say optical, is it actually looking? Maybe people may be confused by that. What does it mean by optical? Is it just comparing, you know, like you play the game of memory, right? Like this is this picture and I turn this one over and that's the same picture and I make the connection. Is that what's happening?
Well, it's sort of similar to that. It's the notion it's optical because it's really looking at a picture. That collection of pixels doesn't mean anything at all to a computer. It is really looking at the picture just the way your brain would. Your eyes see it and your brain recognizes that it's a given letter. That's really what this system is trying to mimic. What this OCR tools are trying to mimic is how does the brain look at a picture optically and then recognize what it actually means.
Right. So it's extracting, right? It's pulling that data off. And so we'll be talking more in this series about the different types of data. So we've got unstructured and semi-structured and structured. We'll be going deeper into those later. Past that extraction piece, like, or even before that, really, Jim, the process of putting that document in, let's just say it's an invoice. I want to scan that invoice. I want to get that invoice in. I want to capture the data off of that invoice. What's happening? What's the next step? And kind of give us how that gets from there to the ecosystem of a business.
Well, you end up with having an extraction process, as you defined, which is using the optical character recognition engines. And there are many that are out there. Some are better at handprint. Some are better at machine print. Some can do both. Lifts the data off the document. And then what you end up doing is you typically try to hit a database to confirm that the information is accurate. So let's say you have a database of employees. Jim Wanner happens to be one of the employees. You hit the database to confirm that it's spelled J-I-M. The database confirms it's spelled J-I-M. Therefore, you know you have an accurate hit on that data. If you don't, then you end up having a human in the loop. And those humans then review the information and they make sure it is correct. Once you have confirmed the accuracy of the information, then you would upload it into whatever system your core system might be. So in the case in point that you brought up, you might have an ERP system that you upload the data into, an invoice, for basically payment.
So you're talking about validation, right?
Correct.
And so that validation, we talk about that human in the loop quite a bit around here because it's still important.
Yeah, in fact, I would argue that's the reason we were successful from the beginning. The first accounts payable system in the United States that we sold was actually the first that actually got up and running in the United States. So if you think about it, the difference between when we sold it compared to other people selling an OCR system for invoicing is they were basically forgetting the fact that you might have a zero hit on your extraction, or you might have a 100% hit. So we always assumed that you'd have to have a human verifying information prior to uploading into the core application. So we have always built systems out from the origins of this company to have humans review information before it is uploaded. Now, there's two components associated with it. The first is you basically want to confirm that you have caught the accurate information. But then the second component, if you think about it, you can have database lookups as well after extraction to even maybe modify the data after human looks at it so that you upload better information into your core system.
So what about deep learning in this whole process? Do we want to, I mean, without going too much into AI, and we'll get into AI later and how it's revolutionizing capture, but as far as that.
You mind if I jump in on this one?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think deep learning's a great word, but it's way overthought. I mean, just to be totally transparent. The way that deep learning we use every day. Those people that use any machines that might be out there. If you use Alexa, if you use Siri, whatever it might be. But the origins of deep learning go back into, let's call it the late 1900s, when people would design expert systems. So you basically are trying to create an environment to replicate how a human thinks. Mm-hmm. So those first systems were called expert systems. They were designed more or less to replicate what a human might be thinking. So the classic case is if you have someone who's 60 years old, they're looking to retire, they have so much knowledge of the industry, you may document how they think through a manufacturing process. So when they leave the organization, you don't lose that data. And then obviously the idea to put it into a production environment happens. So now you're trying to replicate what a human would do in a production environment. So if you use the idea of an invoice, so would they accept the data on the invoice? Or would they reject it? Those types of decisions can be used for deep learning. Now, those are very, very high level ideas and concepts, but you can get into a much more abstract concept where you throw an idea at a computer system, you have thousands, if not tens of thousands of rules. So you're mimicking as much of a human thought process as possible. And hopefully you bring back the right result. If you bring back the right result, process the data. If you don't bring back the right result, then you have questions. So in today's world, the classic example that most of us deal with on a regular basis, except those who are probably in their 90s, like my dad, are chatbots. So basically a deep learning system could be a chatbot that continues to learn, continues to get questions, continues to deal with those items as they come through. The next thing you know, you have this system that basically can almost mimic human knowledge, human thought, human information and human feedback to questions. So I try to simplify it because you can overcomplicate this. And the one thing about deep learning that I think that they try to do is make it too complex, because I think at its simplest form, it's basically just a series of rules, a series of logic that could be scripted in the day, but now are basically simple coding applications, low-code applications that you can roll out fast and effectively.
So you talked about a minute ago, we mentioned once you get that data, you want to push it into your ecosystem, to your systems. Cameron, you've got a lot of experience in your side with connecting with all of these systems and the integration points. Talk about some of those integration points and how critical that moving that data to those points are. Like, talk about ERPs, all of those and other pieces that may go into that other than just expand a little bit on that, other than just OCR.
Well, I think that they're really the basis or the key point to all of this is the data integrity and the quality of the data that you're dealing with. And Jim touched on it a little bit earlier when he was talking about, always keeping a human in the loop. And it's interesting to me because people seem to have this idea that with the more modern AI tools, the human in the loop is maybe less necessary. I would argue it's probably more necessary. And getting back to our earlier discussion about the OCR tools, original OCR tools returned a confidence value that said, hey, I'm 92% confident that this is a letter A. And you can leverage that to decide whether or not to put that data in front of an operator or not. Modern AI tools come back, this is what I think the answer is. It doesn't tell you whether it's confident or not. Was it 51%, 99%? You don't know. And so that's a real challenge. And we're working with some partners to try to actually drive updates to the more modern AI tools to start giving us those confidence levels, because you really need it to get clean data. And that clean data has to be there before you can even start talking about the integrations and the integration points. So how else can we clean up data? Well, we can clean up data by having database lookups, which Jim mentioned. It's potentially much better for me to go and look at a PO based on the PO number I extracted and identify what the lines on the invoice are from that, because the PO is what I actually ordered. And now I can compare those two things. I don't need to necessarily data enter all the lines of the invoice if I know the PO is right. And I've looked at it and programmatically compared those two things. So once I've got my data good and clean using those types of things, then you talk about pushing that data payload into your ERP, for example. And the best way to do any kind of integrations, if you can, is a direct API-based integration. But if you can't do that, maybe you've got a cloud-enabled ERP or an older closed system, then you can start looking at bringing other tools to bear, such as robotic process automation, RPA, to actually integrate those tools real-time so that you're really pushing data back directly into the system. You're eliminating all that data entry and that manual keying, what we used to call a swivel chair integration. That all goes away. And what you've got is this interactive conversation between two different systems, trying to make sure that the data is getting to where it needs to be. But really what you're doing is getting that task completed, which is the important part.
So that first step of bringing that data in, the better you can be on the first try, the less human in the loop is necessary.
Here's your number.
I was going to ask. Well, what number are we looking at from a percentage standpoint?
So we used to build out the model, right? Because that's what you're trying to figure out what your return on investment is. So for every character you get right, you have 100% improvement because you won't have a human reviewing it. For every character that you have to review, basically it takes 1.5 keystrokes to correct. So if you think about it, if somebody's sitting there keying, especially if they're really good on a 10 keypad, they can fly through 10, 15, 20,000 keystrokes per hour. But if you're actually doing verification on a data entry screen, you're probably going to do at best 3 to 4,000 keystrokes. So that's why these 1.5 ratios are important for you to understand. And that's why Cameron was walking through those integration points. That's why the integration is key, because then you don't have to actually review the data. You confirmed it's accurate. So basically, you don't have the 50% uplift on your keystrokes on the keyboard.
Yeah, and that is all about accuracy, right? I mean, because humans, that's a huge element of, especially in intelligent data capture, and we're moving into that AI-powered side where it increases your accuracy even more.
And once you go below, an 80% accuracy rate, The problem is then you're probably going to be struggling with a return on investment. So, or you could be if the software is super expensive. Obviously, if it's not, then you don't have an issue.
Right.
But basically anything that you can do like in the 90, 95 percentile, 98 percentile of hit rates, especially if you have your database lookups, your amount of keystrokes per individual are going to be so low, especially if you don't have false positives, then ultimately the return on investment is almost instantaneous. You're talking 3-4 months, maybe less, if you do it right.
And I want to take a second to highlight that most people don't relish having to sit there and key that fast.
I've seen one.
That liked it?
Yeah.
There's not a lot. So I would never say that nobody, because there clearly are some people who might enjoy that. But by and large, that's not something that people want to do, nor is it necessary when we can provide a system that helps and allow those people to go do something that matters.
Yeah, and the problem is it's not something you do want to do for 8 hours a day either, because there is a law of diminishing return when you have a human being sitting in front of a computer. So if you think about it, if you typically after 4.5 hours, the productivity of an individual drops. Now, could you do it for 6 hours with some breaks? Sure, you could.
Cameron goes for 12 hours straight without any problem.
And I'm not the guy, he said, love
it. He's not the guy that loves
it. I promise you it wasn't him for the data entry
right,
job.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, I would have never guessed.
Yeah, there was one guy. So if you think about it, the last thing you want to do is have somebody sitting down at a computer and doing this all day long. When I say all day long, I'm referring to 8 or more hours. So if you can keep these to chunks of basically 4 hours per shift, if you're able to review it, you're going to have your highest productivity levels.
Thank you for joining us today on the Orange Chair Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Keymark, Inc., experts in automation software for over a quarter of a century. Join us next Wednesday for the latest installment of our series on intelligent data capture. You can also find us on Instagram at the Orange Chair Podcast. For more information, please visit our website at keymarkinc.com. Until next time.